Welcome to Career Tools. Today's topic, developing internal relationships, the where. Part one. Here we go. In our Build a Network cast, we told folks that the more relationships they had, the better, right? And develop relationships indiscriminately.
As a guard against people thinking, I need to have a relationship with the CEO, two or three key people, and a couple people below me, and I'll be fine.
Right.
Right? And people choose poorly, and they wonder why they don't get anything out of their network. Yeah.
Okay. And you still believe that guidance still stands today, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, most people, more than half the world, are not naturally comfortable sticking out their hand and creating relationships from nothing. People show up to meetings late. I know people who show up to meetings late because they don't want to be caught in chit-chat. And when executives tell them, well, a lot of our work is done in the 5 or 10 minutes before meetings start where we're chatting about things when it's not official and not everybody's listening and I'm not on the record, so to speak, that's when I get stuff done. I get people to agree to stuff and I ask for favors and so on. And these people who don't want to build relationships won't do it. I mean, they know that senior people consider that a key part of their job, but they don't do it. And so another problem with what I call the rifle shot approach, pick the only eight people that you'll ever need in your network. And it always seems one of them is the CEO. Problem is, if you ignore everyone else only to focus on the eight, you're not going to be that good at relating to the eight because you won't have that much skill relating to other people. Sorry, but you won't. And you'll come across as arrogant to those people whom you don't want to meet. So yeah, the guidance is still definitely.
Okay. But tonight you're going to share some ideas about being more targeted. So I worry that people forget our initial guidance.
No, this cast is not about being more targeted. It's about having a picture of what your network might look like. If someone's indiscriminate, they're going to develop more relationships and my guess is there's a 75% chance they'll end up with the structure we're going to recommend tonight. On the other hand, if you don't really know what you're doing, whether because you're not even thinking about it or because you're being indiscriminate and just trying to meet as many people as possible and really creating a professional life that is rich in relationships, if you don't think about it, you may end up weighted one way or the other in a way that's not helpful. And it may be frustrating for you to expend effort outside of your comfort zone and to perhaps not get the kind of benefit that you might want. You don't create relationships just to get benefit, right? We've talked before about the way to build your network is to serve other people. But no, it's a way to analyze and assess what your relationships are like and to give you a starting point. And if you're indiscriminate in developing relationships with a lot of people, when you then meet someone whom you're thinking, I probably need to be more in that direction, it'll be easier for you because you'll develop the natural interpersonal skills you need.
Right. And I think the challenge for some people when we say build relationships indiscriminately is that, you know, the whole organization is a target and that seems really big and difficult. And so I think today's cast can help people narrow down a bit where they can direct their energies. And for those who are not naturally people who don't naturally go out and develop relationships, this will provide some focus that's going to make it a little bit easier, I think, at least intellectually to kind of have a framework for attacking it.
Yeah, I think a way to think of it differently is not use the word target. We don't target people. We need to know where we need to have relationships. You need to have a good banker in your quasi-professional personal life. You need a good banker. You probably need to know where the grocery store is. You know, if you become an executive, you need a tailor. You know, you probably need to know where you buy your shoes. You've probably chosen a brand of shoes and those kinds of things. You need a number of different types of relationships, but we're not going to say to you, pick this type, only this type. We're saying assess against this general idea of where the distribution might happen and make sure your distribution generally shades in this way.
Right. Yeah, I think the other thing is just looking at this, the framework you're going to walk through is this map that you're going to develop is going to help you identify areas that you're blind to, that places where you need some relationships and yet you just don't even think about it. And the framework helps that, I think.
Yeah, I think people, when we say indiscriminately, what happens is people say, okay, I'll develop more network relationships. And then they end up patterning it in ways that aren't effective. And if you're not going to be indiscriminate, in other words, if you're going to discriminate, you at least ought to understand where the weighting ought to be, all things being equal.
Good. Okay. This is a good one. So let's get to it.
Yeah. So we've got five recommendations. First of all, obviously, we're going to recover developing internal relationships, how important they are. You've got to have them. People just miss this all the time. Your organization is becoming more project-oriented. It's becoming less vertical. It's still much more vertical than the flat earthers of the world would have us believe, but it's becoming less vertical. And then you've got to look at your network in terms of its height, both above and below you, its breadth across the organization. And you've also got to look at activity, what people do, and make sure that you're covering those areas of activity of the firm that will broaden your base. And then lastly, we've got to look at a framework for thinking about it. And it doesn't take long at all.
Okay, so let's talk about developing internal relationships. We've talked about it before, but for those of you who have not listened to this cast, it's something we need to talk a little bit about.
Right. This is a huge blind spot, as you mentioned, for so many people. You simply cannot rely on your boss and your boss, the peers of yours on your team, those people who report to your boss. That is not the universe. Okay? It's not. And if you're a manager, it's not your boss, your peers, and your directs. That is not the universe. It's not the solar system. It's not your planet. It's not even your continent. That's your hometown. And you've got to have a network that gets somewhat, well, much more universal when it comes to your organization, if we define your organization as the universe. And frankly, we ought not to. We ought to call it the planet that you're on, because there are relationships external to the other that are important as well. Many people only think of networks relative to job changing, right? Because they read so much about, I got to have a network for job changing. And so they start creating a job changing network, and they call that their network. When in fact, your network, I can remember years ago, an executive telling me, my network includes my tailor. Because as it happens, well, I'll give you a perfect example. In Atlanta, Georgia, there's a barbershop where most of the Coke executives get their haircut. Most of the male executives get their haircut. It's probably less powerful than it was, less influential than it was 20 years ago, because hopefully there are more women executives there. But that's where they all got their haircut. It's very, very close to Coke headquarters down near the Georgia Tech and the Varsity. And those guys, barbers, were absolutely in their network. And people think of external networks as a way to help them change jobs. And so they define network. For so many people who don't want to do network, they then reduce it to an absurdity and say, okay, networks are for job changing, which by definition then means I'm going to get fired, or I'm going to resign or something. And so internal networks wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. Although sometimes people do say, I don't have an internal network. I just have allies here. I said, dude, those are, that's your network. I'm sorry. That's how it works. It's relationships with people whom you can count on, whom you may have to rely on, who are not influenced by your role power.
Right.
That's who is in your network.
Yeah. And of course, they help you be more effective. And if you're thinking about a new job, the best thing you can do is be good at the one you have, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And have results to show.
Yeah, exactly. So most people think of networks in an external context, and they think of, therefore, the relationships of people in other companies, former companies, or maybe the ones they want to work for in the future. They tend to be weighted very heavily toward your own industry. They think of customers and suppliers when we talk about networks. But the problem is that's all built on a possibility in the future. And as you say, the best way to increase the possibilities in the future is not to build a great external network. It's to produce results now. What we need is results now and relationships for when we want to share or make clear how good our results were. You need relationships internally in your company, as you say, to help you get stuff done right now, current company. And look, as an aside here, it is far better for you folks to get promoted or to move sideways to do something new in your current company than to leave to get a promotion. The company where you're at, where you are now, you have goodwill from the relationships you built. Even if there aren't that many relationships, you always have more relationship, more goodwill in a place you've been for a while than in a place you're going to. You don't even see that goodwill. It's the grease that makes it easier for you to get things done. In the new company, you have at best a 6-hour relationship with the hiring manager, maybe an hour with a few other people. Those aren't relationships. You're far more likely to be successful in a promotion within than you are a promotion at a new company. But promotions nowadays and the kind of flatter, less vertical companies that more and more organizations are moving toward really require you to have relationships with other folks to leverage informal, non-role power-based influence. There are three types of influence, three types of power in all organizations. There's role power, which the company grants you and which you can't change on your own. There's expertise power, which other people grant to you by turning to you in deference to your knowledge or expertise, as you were, in a given area. It takes a long time to build. And just because you're an expert doesn't mean you have expertise power. It's only when other people ask you to use that expertise that you are granted some expertise power. And lastly is relationship power. And that one you can change on your own. And frankly, you can change it much more quickly than role power or expertise. If you don't have relationship power, particularly in a younger company or in a smaller company or in what might be a flatter company, if you don't have relationship power, everything's going to be harder. And frankly, Mike, 30 or 40% harder, you think?
Certainly. Yeah, that's probably low, I think.
Yeah, I'm trying to be as conservative as possible. So, look, there are four good reasons for building relationships internally. First, obviously, the easy one is help. If you need help or your team needs help, or even if your boss needs help or somebody else needs help that you can provide, in fact, if you don't know each other, you can't help. When Continental and United Airlines merged, there are 1,400 systems working between the two companies, okay? Everything, maintenance, payroll, pilot time off, pilot unions, all kinds of stuff. There are 800 systems on one side, 600 on the other, and each has to be assessed, and someone has to decide which of them the new company is going to go forward with. You think about that, and you go, wow, there's probably some overlap in some of those systems. If you knew that someone else in your company was running a system which did a job similar to yours, right? Would you not want to learn from them, perhaps amalgamate the system to save the budget? Now, some savvy people would say, no, I'd figure out what their weaknesses were, pitch my boss, and I'd make sure my system won. Sometimes that does work. It absolutely does. That's the narrow, selfish, political approach. And when anybody else does it, you scream bloody murder. Or what you do is you create a relationship with that person, you find out what would work best, and in collaborating, you discover that there's plenty of work to go around probably, and maybe you get out of this job and you can end up with a promotion even if your system is the one that goes under. You can't do that though if you don't have a lot of relationships elsewhere in the organization where an internal job would be good, because usually it's only people at the very top who are disgruntled or people in the middle who are getting laid off or are considered redundant who leave in the early or middle parts of a merger. You don't want the curse of having your company go through a difficult merger and you leaving in the middle of it and having a company say, a new company trying to hire you say, gee, I would have loved for you to stay. That would have been a good experience. There are companies who look at resumes, look at backgrounds and say, has this person ever been through a downturn? I'm pretty sure years ago we did a cast on that. Have you spent the time with one company and ridden through a trough, an entire trough with one company to learn race, don't chase, to learn how to handle budgeting and how to handle hiring and how to handle payroll and how to cut costs and various things and how to respond when capital markets loosen up and there's an opportunity to grow as well. And the other thing about that, about 800 and 600 systems is, I mean, folks, do you really even know 50 of the systems your company has? If you needed to know something about the 350th system that your company has, would you know whom to ask? And the fact is, if you want help on something, you need to know who to ask. We've said before that you've got to have a friend in HR. You've got to have a friend in accounts payable. You got to have a friend in payroll, right? And it could be someone related to somebody, a friend of a friend, but you ought to know who those people are that you can turn to.
Exactly. Now, you got to talk about politics as well, right? I mean, we get emails folks, right?
I used to do political work. I don't do that anymore, Mike. So, no, I don't have to talk about it.
I wish you would, but that's a different conversation. But this goes back to the emails we get from folks quite often where they say they're in this particular situation and they need help, but it's just so complicated because of the politics. Yeah.
And what they mean by complicated is it's not simple to understand, and relationships are making it unclear, because if everyone were as smart as me and devoid of all relationships, the world could be perfectly logical and everyone could do what I say they should do, because clearly mine is the only logical response to this very difficult situation.
Exactly. If the world just ran on facts and we didn't have people, it'd be so much easier.
Right? It'd be great. I'd be out of a job, but, you know, that's okay. Look. We've said it before. What you call politics and describing what goes on in your company, other people call, particularly executives, call collaboration, cooperation. You don't call it politics when you ask one of your peers to cover something while you have a day off. Maybe they make a decision that you wouldn't have made. And the reason they got to make that decision is because they're a friend of yours. Is that politics? No, it's not. Is it might it be called politics? You bet your bottom dollar it might be.
Yeah, somebody two levels down is calling it politics.
Exactly. The quid pro quos that happen in other places in the organization. It doesn't matter where it is relative to you. Somewhere else in the organization, somebody scratches one person's back and the other person scratches back. And the fact is, if you had a relationship over there, you'd get the quid pro quo. If you've ever had an experience where you've heard people talking about something and you're like, man, these people work for me, or there's somebody that I would never dream that they would know that. And they know it like it's secondhand knowledge. And that's politics. Does it bother you, particularly when they're a couple levels down? How could they possibly know? How come the organization hasn't told me? Well, the organization, quote unquote, doesn't know. But people in the organization know. Why? Because there's an informal network that makes a difference. There's another reason, support, right? If you want support for an initiative, you need to know people who will benefit from it. Let me say that again. If you want support for your initiative, for something you're trying to change, you need to know people who will benefit from it. And you have to have a relationship with them such you can go to them and explain to them how they'll benefit, and so they'll speak up for you. Look, a benefit to the overall company isn't always a benefit to one team. Maybe you come up with a great IT solution for replacing the customer service phone system with VoIP, right? Voice over internet protocol. And as luck would have it, you can also enable customer service to take 50% more calls by using an instant chat system on the web, right? You can demonstrate the overall cost effectiveness for the company. The new system costs less to maintain. You can get more customer contact and so on. Customer service isn't going to see it that way.
Oh, really? You don't think they're just going to jump right on top of that?
Suddenly their budget for people is going to be cut, and that, you know, budget size matters, right? They're going to see the empire eroding. They're going to potentially see people being let go, a great deal of retraining. It's going to cost time away from phones, and that's hard, and change is hard. Change is really hard in your organization when somebody else's idea causes it.
Yeah.
If you want support for your idea from customer services, you better be able to talk to them about it. And if you don't have any relationship at all, they're not even going to listen to you. Because why would I listen to you? I don't even know you, and you're suggesting a change that's going to mess up my world? Oh, no, thank you. Right? You don't want to go to the CEO and have her say, what does customer service say? Well, I figured the cost savings were so significant, I didn't even talk to him. Oh, and the CEO looks to the person who's reports to, you know, a skip of his, who's two level above you, and say, okay, yeah, you know, let's get this squared away, figure this out. And then the next item, and you're like, whoa, what just happened? What just happened is you didn't pre-wire, and the CEO is not going to drop a bomb on customer service just because he can say or she can save some money, because they have a relationship with them, and they don't do that to people they have a relationship with. And otherwise, all you're doing is making enemies, folks. And look, the last thing about it is executive effectiveness. You know, we heard somebody say something once, Mark, executives don't do anything. Yeah, they don't physically make stuff with their hands. They don't actually type the computer keys that cause the code to come out. They don't deal with individual customers. Oh, frankly, yes, they do deal with individual customers. I know some CEOs who 40% of their time is spent with customers traveling around. I remember one guy once said, I want his jet. I said, that jet goes nowhere but customers. He's like, oh. And actually, that was an overstatement. I mean, the jet took him to his vacation home, but.
Yeah, and often angry customers.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, the number of times I've been on a corporate jet with somebody, and we're on a 3-hour flight across country, and there is nothing but work going on that plane. Yeah, the plane is an enormous benefit to the work output of the person who's flying on it. But the thing is, everything they do is done through other people. They set strategy, but in order to get that strategy implemented, they have to get their organization behind it. more than half the people we know who have gotten stuck at the manager level have gotten stuck because they didn't put enough effort into developing relationships. If you don't have the ability to develop relationships quickly and you don't already have in place some relationships, you're going to struggle when you become an executive. You won't have, when they give you three times as much work, you won't have the relationships to assess the various ideas you have and bounce ideas off one another and be willing to do some quid pro quos of your own in order to help the entire organization, because you just can't get it all done. And if you don't have relationships, you can't communicate in a way that'll help you decide and then act.
Exactly. Now, we said we wanted to talk about relationships in the context of height, breadth, and activity. So let's talk about height first.
Yeah, well, just one more thing about this. There's probably 20%, maybe as high as 40%, I'm just guessing here, of the audience that we've already lost. And maybe they're going to stick with us because they like the sound of my voice. I doubt it. If you're still with us in this cast and you're thinking you don't really need to do this, please send me an email. Please, I dare you to send me an email and say, you know, Mark, I'm not really into the relationship thing. I'm just not a people person, but I really think I'm going to become an executive. I'm going to be good at it. I want you to put a marker in the water that you believe your logic, your superior intellect, your knowledge of the customer or your knowledge of your product or your knowledge of a particular system, without any investment in relationships at all, you don't really need to worry about people. What you need to do is get your facts right and make things happen by convincing people of the logic and the rationale and the reasoning and the should of the moral and superiority of your point of view. Please put a marker on the timeline today saying, I'm going to be effective and I'm not going to worry about relationships as much. I want to check with you in a year and see how you're doing. I dare you.
You sound like Robert Conrad.
Yeah, that's right. Go ahead. Put the Duracell battery on my shoulder and go ahead. I dare you. Knock it off. Yeah. Look, I wish it weren't so. It'd be great if the world was totally logical. I might have an advantage there, but no, it's not. What's Horseman's first law? I can't remember. Gee, what is it? What might it be? Oh, yeah, it's all about people. Frustratingly so. But there we are. Okay, sorry. You asked about height, right?
I did. Yeah, before the dark mark moment.
Yeah, no, that wasn't dark mark. Look, I'm willing to be a bit of a pain if I can motivate somebody who's thinking now I can get by without relationships to change their behavior, because I don't want them to become an executive and mess up a bunch of people or get frustrated themselves or get fired or actually resign to pursue other opportunities.
Exactly. So don't send the email, folks. Just reconsider what you're thinking.
Send the email. mark@manager-tools.com.
Okay. Height.
Okay. So look, we want to look at three different axes. We want to look at height. We want to look at breadth across the company. And we also want to look at what people do in the organization, because oftentimes height and breadth don't touch on the activity various people are doing. If you think of an org chart, height means looking at your relationships above and below. You're your boss, your boss's boss, your directs, your skips, and further on down and so on. The greatest density when we talk about height is going to naturally be people on the same level as you. Your peers, the people who report to your boss, and those people who report to your boss's peers are at your level.
Okay. Right. And those are the people that you naturally work with every day, right?
Yes, exactly. They're likely to be on the same level roughly organizationally as you. And that's where the biggest density will be. People at your peer level. Now, sometimes you could make a case that somebody above a level or below a level from you would still be considered a peer. We're not going to quibble about that too terribly much. Sometimes organizations are not purely entirely linear and vertical, horizontally, and it's not a perfect grid, but roughly those people at the same level as you. Now, look, you might have cultivated some relationships above you. You'll certainly know your boss, and perhaps you'll know his boss. You'll probably know your boss's peers. Perhaps you have a mentor somewhere else in the organization, a couple of three levels up. You don't want to develop these relationships just by being or to be a suck up. You don't want to do that. But these people are going to support your promotions or not support your promotion. And so if you have an opportunity to talk to one of your boss's peers, don't waste it. Okay. By the same token, you don't want to ignore the people below you. You probably know your team of directs if you're a manager. Perhaps you know your peers' teams of directs to some degree, not as well as your team. If you're high enough up the organization chart to have a team below them, do you know those folks? Your skips and your skips peers, right? If you don't, how do you know where the talent is coming from, right? If you look down at your skips and say there are a couple people I can promote, but you're going to have four openings in the next year, are you going to go outside for two of them? Manager tools generally, and career tools as well, and from a different perspective, generally believe the best promotions are internal. There are a lot of companies historically in the history of the world that the only place you can join is at the bottom. And if you know you can't go outside, suddenly it improves everybody's ability to develop people, by the way. So if it's 10 p.m. and you need something urgently, can you reach down the organization to get it done by leveraging a relationship as opposed to just saying, I'm a VP and you should listen to me? Or do you need to wait for your team to call their team, to call somebody else where the relationships are stronger? So we want you to think of your relationships as you're going to have the most relationships if you look at the organization as a series of horizontal bands. And the bottom band are entry level or individual contributors, and the top band is senior executives, and we'll assume you're in between somewhere. If we were to color the density of the bands, and I'm gonna make this up, but hopefully this will make sense to everybody. If your company has seven bands from the bottom all the way to the top, and you're in band four, so there are three bands above you and three bands below you, okay? So you have directs and skips, and your directs have skips, to use manager tools lingo, okay? And you have a boss, and you have a boss's boss, and your boss's boss's boss in this scenario is the senior executive, the CEO, COO, whatever title he or she has. If that were the case, and I were not to think about the breadth of my network, and we simply color-coded the bars based on how many people in the bar percentage-wise we had a relationship with. The center bar, your bar four, okay, level four, horizontal bar four, would be the darkest. Bars three and five would be next dark. Bars two and six would be next dark. And bars one and seven would be least dark, okay? Now, look, we're not suggesting that there's only one person at the very top, but if you count all the senior executives, let's say there are 10 of them, if you knew one person there and you knew three or four at the next and 8, 9, or 10 at the next level, then you might know 20 at your level. And again, this is all, I'm making this all up on the spur of the moment to give you some idea of density, but it clearly doesn't apply to a company with 800,000 people or millions like Walmart, a really, really well-managed company. And then you'd have, you know, you'd have 20 or so at your level, and then you'd have 10 at the next level down. And then at your skip level, you'd have four or five. And way down at the bottom, you'd know a few people who had just started, maybe three or four or five, but probably not much more than that. And so it would, if you started at the bottom and went up to the middle to your level, it would get darker on the way up. And then when it got to your level, it started getting lighter again as it went all the way back up to the top. The point being, it's easier to form a relationship with your peers. And by the way, you can reach all the way down and across the organization if you have a peer relationship all the way across the organization, because somebody all the way down and all the way across the organization works for somebody who's a peer of yours, and it's easier to form relationships with peers than it is with people very, very senior or very, very junior to you, okay? And the idea here, again, is that is a rough estimate for you. If you do a quick mapping of your network and your company, and you discover that you have the strongest bar is one level down from you, that's not good, folks. Particularly if you're a manager. Managers need to have strong peer relationships with other managers. And look, if your boss has five directs, we assume you have pretty good relationship with a couple, three, maybe even four. In many cases, all four of your boss's directs, you know, your peers that all report to your boss. But if that's what you think of as strong, you're crazy. You're smoking crack. You need a couple from either side of your boss's peers' teams. You need a couple more further than that and even further than that. And you can get to 20 people pretty quickly at your level. And it's easy to identify them, thanks to the title, and you'll probably come in contact with them a lot more often than you realize. And it's just a matter of sticking out your hand at that level. And when you say, "Hi, I'm Mark Horseman," and they say, "Oh, hey, I'm Robert." I say, "What do you do?" He says, "Well, I do this." And they say, "Oh, I'm a director over in this area." And then immediately they know they can be more open with you because you're a peer of theirs. Okay. So if there are 7 senior executives at your firm and you know 6 of them pretty well, like you exchange emails with them once a week and you're chatting, but there are 2 levels between you and them. And then at the levels between you and them, you've only know 3 or 4 people. Your network is poorly weighted in a more senior way. Now, some of you may be listening and thinking, but gee, that'd be great. This is all about politics, and so I want more senior people. No, because those more senior people having that weight at the top, you can't just go and ask them for favors. There are times when senior people might say, "Yeah, I'm a big fan of Amy's. I'm a friend of hers, and I simply can't in this situation make a decision that benefits her organization because there's more at stake here." Or I have a relationship at this level, which if I choose to support Amy on this, I'm going to be dissing Terry on this other thing. So take a look at your org chart. Take a look at the strength of your relationships with various people and make sure you've got the most relationships at your peer level, somewhat less a level above and a level below you, somewhat less than that, 2 levels above and below you, and somewhat even less than that, 3 and 4 levels, 3 levels above and below you. As a rough idea. And by the way, your organization might have 12 levels. I just picked 7 to make it easy because that way it was an odd number. And the band in the middle was, they had 3 above and 3 below. One more thing about height, which will also apply to breadth as well. If you have 20 people in your network internally and your company has 10,000 people, your network isn't strong enough. Okay? You need more people. But we're not here to beat you up about that. We respect that. There are some people who are not naturally inclined to do that. And that's okay, folks. If those 20 that you have generally adhere to the banding that we're talking about, then you're off to a good start. That's a good sign that even though you have 20, and yeah, you could beat yourself up that you ought to have 40, you ought to have 50, you ought to have 60, at least you know roughly you're heading in the right direction. And the great thing is, of those 20, if your banding is strongest at your level, it's easiest to use people at your level, using people being a bad choice of words, I apologize. It's easier to leverage the existing relationships to get more relationships at your level and a relationship a level down. It's easy to build relationships with other people a level down because your weighting is well balanced for the kind of network you want to have. So it's okay if your network is too small. I would much rather have somebody's network who's perhaps not small enough, but is well balanced and say to themselves, "I'm going to build my network," than somebody whose network is really ill balanced above or below and then say, "Well, I'm going to get more at the other level." Because if you've got somebody who's got a bunch of senior executive relationships, they may stumble a little bit going down a couple of levels in the organization. They may just not have the common touch, which would be too bad. So keep that in mind. We're not suggesting if you have a small network right now, we're not here to beat you up. We're here to suggest to you think about it, analyze a little bit. It doesn't take more than 5 minutes. And we're going to give you, for those of you with premium content, we're going to give you a grid that you can put people on and get a sense of how am I doing relative to this balance that I want.
Thanks, everyone. That's it for this week. We'll finish this one up next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.